please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Bratfold, Judge Larson, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. I'm just going to take 1 second and get a little set up here. Okay. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to this session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. We are happy to welcome visitors from, if you're wondering why there's a crowd here, visitors from the University of Minnesota, especially students who are in the Emerging Leaders in the Law program, undergraduate students from the University of Minnesota. And I believe we also have a mentee of Judge Bratfold's from St. Thomas here, law school, and welcome to everyone then here who is here to observe. We have three cases on our oral calendar this morning. The first case is A23-1779, A23-1981, Brent Lee Florine versus Lauren Marie Florine. Am I pronouncing that last name correctly?
Yes.
Thank you. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. The podium has a toggle switch, sort of waist high, that puts the podium up and down so you can adjust it to suit your needs. This oral argument is being live streamed. We will make it audio recording only for public posting on our website later. With that, counsel for appellant, please state your name and the party you represent at the start of your argument, and we are ready for you when you are ready.
Good morning, Justices. I am Chris Sawiski on behalf of Lauren Florine, the appellant in this matter, and may it please the court. We are here today on, basically, we brought three issues. The respondent has a couple issues on spousal maintenance and income. The issues that my client is bringing to this court require just a brief factual understanding. One, there was a trial in this matter. At that trial, the court determined that the appropriate amount of spousal maintenance was $15,000 a month based on a budget of $25,000 a month for Ms. Florine. That was a reduction from what she had asked for, but the court found that to be a reasonable monthly budget based on the marital standard of living. The other issue that is before this court that is of import would be the issue of the dissipation of the homestead. So the parties stipulated in that judgment decree to a sale of the homestead, to a division of the proceeds with a payoff of certain expenses that might arise, and they appointed a consensual special magistrate to make decisions regarding the homestead and its sale.
Was there a valuation of the homestead at that time in the J&D?
I don't recall off the top of my head. I think both parties talked about $3 million in that range, and they originally placed it on the market for a significant amount. I think it was 3.7, but it never sold at that amount. They never had an offer at that amount. The house was on the market for... So if the judgment decree was 2016, it was on the market for 6 years. The only offer they ever received, I should say they received two offers. The first offer was 2021 for $2 million. Ms. Florine was then, that offer fell through. Ms. Florine was removed from the home at that point because there was a feeling that she wasn't cooperating. And then the home sold 9 months later for $2 million under the control of Dr. Florine. So as long as we're talking,
yes.
Oh, go ahead.
If we focus then on a dissipation.
I can start there because I think that actually is the easier issue in some ways.
If we assume for purposes of argument only, okay, so I assume that I understand that you would disagree with what I'm, the factual scenario I'm setting up.
Okay.
For purposes of argument only, if the occupant of a house, you know, in these circumstances, a dissolution, and one of them gets the house and it's ordered to be sold, is in fact responsible for a diminution in value of that home post-dissolution. So by virtue of damage or whatever, assuming that to be factually proved, are you saying that there is no, is it your argument legally that there is no way for a district court to address that with respect to the division of the proceeds of an ultimate reduced sale?
So under the dissipation statute, I would argue that.
And under the dissipation statute, meaning precise, specifically?
518581B, which talks about dissipation, and it talks about during the commencement or prior to the commencement of the proceedings and during the proceedings. Because what happens once you have a judgment decree is that property division is final. So to reopen that property division, you would have to go under 518145 and show fraud, show some sort of change in circumstances. And they could have done that here. They didn't. They chose not to. They chose to argue dissipation. The statute does not allow for it. It specifically says this period of time.
Or perhaps there's a civil remedy outside the family law context.
There might be. There might even be a post-decree motion, you could say, where, look, there was damage caused. We think it was connected. And I would note on the side that there absolutely is no connection between the value of the home and what they're alleging happened in terms of while my client was living there. There's nothing that says we had an offer for $3.1 million. And it went away because of the condition of the home. That's just not accurate. What is clear in the proceedings is that there were just no offers. It was too high. The respondent at the appellate level asked numerous times for the value, the fair market value, the sale price, rather, to be lowered over my client's objection. So my client wanted to sell it for a higher amount, but that didn't happen. And the CSM on this case made those determinations that it was appropriate to lower the amount, which is why the price was at $2 million. And that's what it sold for.
So, counsel, I'd like to go back to your comment to Judge Smith's question that the district court doesn't have authority under 518.58 subdivision 1A to make the decision it did in this case. If that's true, well, let me put it this way. Is that your best argument for relief on appeal?
Well, I think there's two arguments that foreclose what the court did here. One is the final division of property, because you're amending the J&D by saying now it's something else. But two, because the statute specifically says, and that's what I was asked, is under that dissipation statute, it specifically says prior to commencement or during the proceedings. Because
The reason I ask is, okay. You know, I noticed that first argument in your brief. I didn't notice the second one, and maybe I just missed it. But the first argument in your brief seems to overlook that, at least in some under subdivision one, last sentence, which I acknowledge that district court seems to have relied on subdivision 1A. If there's a substantial change in the value of the asset between the date of valuation and the final distribution, which seems to be what we're talking about here, again, viewing the district court's decision favorably to the district court's analysis, the court may adjust the valuation of that asset as necessary to effect an equitable distribution.
And if I then would draw the attention of this court back to the earlier parts, the earlier sentences, and there's two of them in that statute that says prior to commencement or during the proceedings.
I think you're referring to subdivision 1A. And you may want to look at this later. I was referring to subdivision 1.
But I think it's all part of the greater
scope.
You know,
there's some interesting differences in the language.
Well, but I think I understand the court's position here, but what I would argue in terms of that last, and it's, I think, the second to last or last line of that clause, is I think that is contemplating the idea of prior to final division.
Well, isn't this prior to final division? I mean,
No, because final division was the judgment decree. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem here.
But the proceeds
it's a property. Well, but the...
It says final distribution, and the proceeds had not been distributed until the
No, they had not.
Right? Okay.
But yeah. They had been divided by stipulation. That was the agreement.
And I don't want to take all of your time on this. I'm sure you want to talk about spousal maintenance as well.
I do, and I do want to get to that unless there's any more questions on dissipation. Okay. So as to spousal maintenance, which I think is the much more problematic issue here in terms of the court, the district court. There was a December 4th, 2020 order. That order basically called spousal maintenance a temporary modification. It was based on the request of Dr. Florine to modify maintenance due to his loss of income because of the pandemic. The parties went through a process. They had a number of hearings. Some of those hearings reviewed things that had happened in the past, but he called it a temporary order. And the reason we know what he wanted to do is 6 months later, he issued another order that explained it. And that was the June 14th, 2021 order. The interesting thing about that order is it had been addressed by the court because my client brought a motion for amended findings. It was late, but he dealt with it, and he issued three findings in there that lay out exactly what he was thinking, which is that we can review this order, and this is in flux because of COVID.
What does it mean to you that you are arguing it's a temporary order versus a modification based on circumstances at that time, which it, I think it's introduced as a modification under 518.39.
Yes.
What difference does it make to you, which way it is?
So to clarify on the statute, those are the grounds for modification. So rather than saying it's a temporary modification, what the court was referencing is how do we look at what grounds do you meet to get to modification in the first place? Do you meet the specific standard? That's what 518A39 is. But the difference between it being a temporary order and it being a permanent order at the time is that now all of a sudden that is the last order from which you can then modify. So as if I draw that out and explain it, Dr. Florine's counsel, and Dr. Florine, I should say, brought a motion in June of 2022 to modify maintenance. Now, if you're relying on the 12-4-2020 order, my client's budget is now $15,000, and the spousal maintenance amount is $4,800 or whatever it was, $44,000. If you rely on the judgment decree, because this was a temporary order and the modification was based solely on his loss of income, if you go back to the judgment decree, now that amount of maintenance is $15,000 and the marital standard of living budget is $25,000. So what happens here is if you use the December order as a permanent order, what you've done, and keep in mind, just as a side note on this issue, she was still in the house at that time. So one of the arguments being made here is that, you know, she did not have the need at that time, but that's not what the court decided. In the December 2020 order, the court said, we're not looking at budgets. We don't have enough money to pay for either budget. And so we are going to reduce it, a share the pain method of modifying maintenance. But if you go back and you recognize it as the temporary order that it is, that means you have to show a change of circumstances in either the income or need of the obligor or the income or need of the recipient. And if she is allowed under the marital standard of living in the judgment decree of $25,000, whether that's in a house, whether it's in a nice apartment, whatever it is, she is entitled then to start from that number, not from the $15,000 number that the court reduced it to for the sake of expediency during the pandemic. And the interesting thing is, if you bootstrap that and call it a permanent order and say, we're going to reduce the amount of money you get, and then 2 years later say, because you got a reduced amount of money in this 2 years, we're going to reduce your maintenance even further. Because now there's no modification necessary. We're going to say your budget isn't $25,000 anymore because you were forced into a lower budget because of the pandemic.
So are you arguing when you say a temporary order that the December 2020 order could be undone and in fact wife could recover from the start of husband's motion to reduce? So the district court's determination that belts needed to be tightened and it needed to be reduced during those times of financial stress, that all of that was just a temporary thing and that can be actually undone or should have been undone?
I'm saying it can be retroactive to that date. And that is, we do this all the time in dissolution matters where you have a temporary order right away and then maybe you find out more information, higher or lower, and you modify it.
Right. So what seemed to be happening here is that there was a temporary order and then the court said, come back to, in October with some additional information and decide in 2020, in fact, income is so much lower, there's a substantial change, et cetera. This is the award now. And now it talked about that as being temporary, but that looks different to me than a case of, all right, I'm going to do this for now, and then we're going to decide it. It seemed like the district court, in fact, decided what the maintenance should be in December 2020 based on proved circumstances.
Well, it did decide that, but it decided it temporarily and said, we need more information income-wise, and so I want to make certain that I have that information before anybody's bringing a motion. And then he further expounded on that in his June order.
Right. I think in December 2020, he said the parties can return after taxes are filed.
Correct.
And which the parties then did do through by virtue of your
Correct.
Client filed a motion.
And the most important thing about that June order is he says it's not a permanent order. He specifically says that in the findings, that it is a temporary order, not a permanent one. And the other interesting thing about that is the memorandum filed by Dr. Florin in support of their motion at that same time called it a temporary order and said this is a temporary fix or a temporary solution. It's not a permanent one. And then in the very next clause of that memo references the reduction of her budget as a temporary reduction, not a permanent one. So those were arguments that they made at the time, and Judge Conley responded in his order and laid out exactly what he was thinking. So I'm out of time. I won't start on a new wild hair. I'll save for rebuttal.
Sounds good. Thank you. And counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Susan Dodlin, and I represent the respondent, Dr. Brent Florin. And I want to make clear what respondent is asking this court to do. While he did file a notice of related appeal on the determination of appellant's income for maintenance purposes, his primary request is that this court affirm the district court's orders in their entirety and be done. Now, if this court decides that any issue that appellant has raised must be reversed and sent back to the district court for further findings, then in that case, respondent asks that the issues he has brought regarding appellant's income also be reversed and included in any remand to the district court. This case should be done. This proceeding, the dissolution proceeding, started 10 years ago, and we have been in nearly constant litigation over that entire period of time. There's been more than 100 orders issued by the district court in this case. This case has outlasted 4 district court judges, 2 consensual special magistrates, and by my count, appellant has had 16 changes in attorneys. Appellant got remarried while the district
counsel,
court...
That issue's not in front of us, right?
No.
Okay, so if you would go to the dissipation
the
issue
question,
and address
yes,
the argument that
I will. Thank you.
Made. Thanks.
Now, apparently it really is appellant's argument that respondent has no recourse for the lost value of the marital homestead when the evidence clearly shows that appellant's behavior over more than 5 years caused the ultimate sale price to fall.
I heard appellant's argument differently. It wasn't that there's no recourse, but that the district court lacked authority under subdivision 1A to enter judgment in favor of your client.
And I disagree with that
yes,
position.
Yes, that's what I want to hear what you have to say on that. Thank you.
Yes. First of all, I think Mr. Zawiski argues that when the final decree was entered, that ended the dissolution proceeding and thus removed any subsequent loss in value of the home from the purview of 518-58 subdivision 1A.
But isn't that precisely what the first clause says? During the pendency of the marriage dissolution?
It does say that. Okay. But as to the distribution of the final home sale proceeds, which could not have occurred prior to entry of the decree, and the party's conduct related to the sale process that was required to take place following the entry of the final decree, the dissolution proceeding was still pending. The court had authority over the parties in the manner in which they conducted themselves with regard to the sale of the house. So I would submit that as to that marital asset and the realization of the proceeds from that asset and the division, the distribution of those proceeds, the district court retained authority to consider appellant's conduct and whether or not her conduct improperly resulted in the loss of a marital asset.
And that, so I'm trying to figure out how far that goes in a given case where there's been a J&D. Is it limited because there was not yet distribution? What about, you know, further motions on?
Well,
it's going to be related to property. I'm just trying to think of the implications of your argument and how far it goes. Is it anything that any post-J&D proceeding that relates to property, or is it specifically because it had not yet been distributed yet? Or
I think it's specifically because it is still an order governing the distribution of a marital asset that cannot be completed until some point in the future after entry of the decree. We're not arguing that some, change of circumstances related to property that occurs later on, like you were awarded an investment account and then the market crashes 3 years later after the decree is final. We're not saying you should be able to come back and ask the court to redistribute that asset or the marital estate, no. But here the court understood that final distribution could not be made until some point in the future. And it retained authority to address the parties' behaviors with regard to the sale process. It directed them both to cooperate with the sale process. It appointed a CSM to oversee the sale process, resolve disputes, and all of that continued for 6 years until the house finally sold. It cannot be the case that during that post-decree period of time, while the sale of the home was still a pending issue, that appellant could treat the home in any manner she wanted to.
But I don't think that's the argument, counsel. I think the argument is whether the relief that you get is under the dissipation provision under subdivision 1A. And I guess my question for you would be, can you point us to any case pre-subdivision 1A or applying subdivision 1A that has applied it to a post-dissolution depreciation of the value of property or anything else? Because I'll be honest, I did a pretty thorough case law search, and I was not able to find a single case that has applied the dissipation common law case law or statute post-dissolution.
Well, I'm happy that your search for such a case was as unfruitful as mine, and apparently as unfruitful as the appellant's, because appellant's brief doesn't have any reference to such a case either. So I would submit that this is, for our purposes, a matter of first impression. So I am here advocating that you determine that the obligation that 518-58 subdivision 1A puts on parties to not misuse or dissipate or use any of the other words that are in the statute to in a way that diminishes the value of an asset that the court is required to have sold and the proceeds distributed later on.
Do you, there was discussion about subdivision 1 as opposed to 1A.
Yes.
The last sentence of which says, if there is a substantial change in the value of an asset between the date of valuation and a final distribution, the court may adjust the valuation of that asset as necessary to effect an equitable distribution. Would that have been, in your view, a valid basis for the district court to make the determination that it made here?
I think it could have been. That was not the argument that we advanced at the district court level. Having heard Judge Bradfold's question about that, it certainly could be something that the district court could have considered, should have considered. I don't have my statute book with me,
mm-hmm.
so I can't make further reference to it.
But you did not raise subdivision 1 in the district court, or it was not raised. I don't know if that was you. Was it you in the district court?
I don't recall that I did.
Okay.
I
mean,
there were a lot of memorandums written in this case.
Sure. And the district court, though, ruled on the basis of 1A. We know that for sure.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. So,
counsel, I don't mean to pull you away from the dissipation argument, but I recognize your time is going down and there's possible
yep.
maintenance to discuss as well. In particular, I'd like to hear your response to appellant's argument. So the question from Judge Smith, I think, basically had to do with what's the effect of whether the district court's decision in, it would have been December of 2020 to reduce spousal maintenance during the pandemic, whether that is viewed as a temporary modification of spousal maintenance. So you have his answer in mind. I'm just curious. I can summarize it, but I'd rather have you just give me your thoughts on it.
So yes.
I understood his answer to say basically a change to the district court's baseline in determining whether there was a substantial change in circumstances in resolving the ultimate decision that's up on appeal, the
okay.
decision not to change spousal
okay.
maintenance.
As has already been discussed, I think, and raised by Judge Smith, the December 2020 order was a far different kind of order than the previous order issued in June of 2020 when the court said, okay, here's what we're going to do for the next 5 months. I'm going to reduce maintenance through October, and then we're going to come back in October, and we're going to see where we are at that point and possibly adjust the reduction at that time.
So let me state my question a little differently. If we assume that the December 2020 order is a temporary modification of spousal maintenance, how does that affect the district court's analysis of the husband's motion to modify that happened in June of 2022? Because I read the district court's order that's on appeal, so that's issued later, right, in 2023. The district court's order used this December 2020 order, spousal maintenance, as the baseline for determination of a substantial change in circumstances.
It did.
Okay, so I'm right about that. So in your view, is that the correct analysis? If the earlier order, the December 2020 order, is a temporary modification of maintenance?
I understood the December 2020 order granted Dr. Florine's motion to temporarily reduce spousal maintenance. And it was a final decision to temporarily reduce
Florine. Disagree with you, and it was a temporary decision. How does that impact, what's the district court's correct analysis then to determine a baseline for husband's later 2022 motion to modify? I'm trying to get out whether any error is harmless, counsel. I mean, that's what I'm trying to ask you, and I just would appreciate an answer.
Right. Okay. If that 2020 order temporarily modified maintenance, then when Ms. Florine brought her motion to effectively restore spousal maintenance on the basis that Dr. Florine's income had gone back up by the time she brought her motion, Then I think, then, barring any other change, the district court correctly would look back to that 2020 order and determine whether there had been a change that would justify her motion for an increase. When Dr. Florine stepped in and brought his motion to modify maintenance, he framed it as there having been changed circumstances both since the December 2020 order temporarily modifying maintenance and since the judgment and decree was entered in 2016. So he approached it either way, whether the court looked at 2020 as the baseline or whether it looked at the original 2016 decree as the baseline. And I think his argument was well-founded regardless of which baseline you use.
So let me, speaking for myself, I feel like the word temporary is being used in two different ways.
Correct, I agree.
One is, I'm going to do a placeholder until we get all the facts, and then I might go back and change retroactively my decision.
Yes.
Speaking for myself, when I look at it, it appears, no, that the district court decided in December of 2020, I'm reducing it.
Yes.
Not, we're going to come back with some more information and decide whether you really had all that income all these months. Your income, husband's income went down, I'm reducing it. Then we're left with the motion to modify after that when husband's income was restored.
Yes.
My concern that I would like you to speak to is I do not, even if you look at the baseline of December 2020, that does not take into account the, in determining the budget of wife, it set the budget at wife, I think, at $14,000, which is the same budget that the district court decided in, the order under review said budget is $14,000, same budget that the district court decided should be imputed in December of 2020. During this time of financial strain, you've got to tighten your belt. I'm not even going to decide whether the your expenses are inflated or not because there's trouble here and we need to temporarily address this during these like extraordinary times. And so when the court is looking at it later on a motion that's under review, the court looks then where the district court very, I'm going to go over a little bit, expressly talked about the budget as being, I'm going to impose this budget in December 2020 because of the times we're in, irrespective of the budget at the marital standard of living previously being $25,000. And so when we're looking at the current order under review, how did the district court take into account, once his income is restored, you know, which it is, that's not an issue, is what the marital standard of living was and should be considered? Why should there be a reduction in the marital standard of living that depends on those extraordinary times?
Dr. Florine's motion to terminate or reduce maintenance was based on the undeniable change of circumstances that was brought about when the marital homestead sold and the $15,000 of home housing expenses related to that property that had been assigned to Ms. Florine at the time of the original decree no longer existed. So of her original $25,000 budget that the court deemed reasonable for her in 2016 at the marital standard of living, that included a $15,000 amalgamation of housing expenses related to that Lake of the Isles home.
So is your argument that the marital standard of living is lower?
The marital standard of...
That the budget that reflects the marital standard of living was appropriately set based on these circumstances, not based on the...
Once that house sold, then the district court needed to redetermine what was a reasonable housing expense for Ms. Florine.
Which it then said at $4,000 a month rent?
Yes. And based on the evidence before the court, there was not a lot different that the court could find. Ms. Florine never submitted a current budget to the court for its use in deciding these issues. She relied on the budget she presented to the court in October of 2020. She did not bring in any evidence of housing. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You've answered my question, and I recognize what you are saying from the record, so we know that already. So sorry to cut you off, but...
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. And, counsel, you have 5 minutes if you need to go over. Grant extra time, we'll do that, but...
Thank you, Your Honor. So I just want to point the court to this June 14th order again. Finding number 10 specifically says, ultimately, this is not a final permanent order on maintenance. It is a temporary order resulting from unprecedented circumstances. Whether maintenance should be permanently modified or returned to its prior level is something that will need to be determined at a future date. This is the same judge who ruled in December, so 6 months later. So he's telling us exactly what it is.
So then the motions are heard, we're at the future date. And what is wrong with the district court's order there then?
And that goes to the question that was asked of Ms. Dodolin, which is, there's no change of circumstances then. If the income is back to its prior level, there's no change of circumstances to bring the motion. That's the problem here. So if the court does not recognize this as a temporary order, if a party had said, we have the tax returns, look, he's now making the same amount of money, we're asking to go back and fix this problem because we could show that it went back to whatever date, right? We would ask the court that, and the court would say, okay, right? Theoretically, that would be the idea. We have this money that's back, the pandemic's no longer affecting it, because the original motion was not brought on the idea that my client was earning or had less need. It was brought on the income.
The original motion?
Yes.
Husband's motion.
Correct. And the problem is, when you don't recognize this, and I made this argument originally, you're bootstrapping it. You're saying, we're going to reduce your budget, and then we're going to use that budget later on to say, you don't need as much money. If it's a temporary order, you get to go back and look at that. And I think the court was clear into what it was trying to do.
How do you respond to respondents' argument that in husband's motion now, they requested modification under either time, and therefore the district court had the authority to enter a permanent order because there was a valid motion to modify in front of the court outside of the temporary order?
But my client would always be at a disadvantage in that situation because she has to reduce her budget because she's earning $11,000 less a month. So she can't afford the budget that she had before. She can only rely upon the marital standard of living. Otherwise, again, that's just the bootstrap I'm talking about.
Because she was required to live using...
More frugally, correct.
She was required to live more frugally because of the pandemic, and so if the district court doesn't revert back to looking at the marital standard of living, then the fact that she's been able to live within her means during a time where there's less money is detrimental. Is that
correct? And it acts as a punishment to her. Now, keep in mind, too, that the original judgment decree removed kids' expenses from that budget. That was hers. That was based in Dr. Florine lowered his. There's a whole finding on this about, you know, he said it's only 15, and the court said you can lower it to whatever you want. But hers was found to be $25,000 as reasonable monthly expenses. To go back to... Justice Bradfield's point on number one. I think 518.1, I think what that is doing ultimately is saying, look it, we have these pieces of property, and I think the enlightening thing to me on the questioning of Ms. Dodolin was the idea of maybe you have a stock account that drops before you can divide it. But that stock account was then based on, it was used to offset something within the rest of the property division. I think that's what 518.58 is getting at. Because if you look at 518.58, the last line is equitable division. In this case, the parties stipulated to an equitable division of the homestead as a division, an equal division minus specific costs.
Well, I guess here's my question, and I might be getting the orders confused, but my recollection, and I'm not able to find the correct order, is that there, with regard to the valuation, the district court did not split it 50-50 because of the amounts husband had to put in to... Am I remembering that there's some amount of money That was given to husband as part of the sale?
So the CSM made findings.
Okay.
That basically said, so there was an argument made in front of the CSM that my client had caused damage to the home. And so he was required to fix it. The CSM made those findings, took that out of her share of the homestead proceeds, and then gave her the remainder. And I'm out of time, but quickly, what that was a reimbursement for all of those costs. And supposedly all those costs were incurred to fix up the home, which then sold for $2 million. So thank you, Your Honor.
Great, thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thanks for your arguments, your briefing. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.